Cirrus and Garmin team up to create the Cirrus Perspective. Pratt & Whitney Canada is hard at work on the new PW810. And Embraer chooses official names for its MLJ and MSJ projects. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, May 21st, 2008. The EBACE show continues in Geneva, and Cirrus Design has used the show as a platform to announce a new Garmin G1000-based avionics system for the SR22G3. Called the Cirrus Perspective, the system goes well beyond just retrofitting a G1000 into an SR22. Instead, the partners have done their homework to make Perspective an aircraft-specific avionics platform with a very high level of integration and some very neat new tricks. As Cirrus CEO Alan Klappmeyer puts it, quote, "Ultimately, with Cirrus Perspective, pilots fly smoother, smarter, and safer," unquote. Perspective can overlay aircraft attitude and air data, engine instrumentation, real-time weather data link, traffic, and terrain on a pair of 12-inch primary and multifunction displays. Cirrus says it's the first single-engine piston aircraft with an all-glass Garmin cockpit to utilize dual solid-state attitude and heading reference systems that can align while in motion, including in-flight dynamic restarts, an architecture patterned after systems found in turbine aircraft. Garmin's synthetic vision technology is standard, as are dual radio modules providing ILS and Class 3 Gamma WAS with LPV approach capability, VHF nav with ILS, Mode C transponder, and Garmin's safe taxi and flight charts. Seamless integration of Garmin's GFC 700 automatic two-axis autopilot is standard, three-axis optional, and a dedicated LVL button allows one-touch wing leveling for pilots who find themselves over their heads in IMC. Cirrus says the system is already certified by the FAA, and deliveries of Perspective-equipped SR22 G3s is set to begin next month. Pratt & Whitney Canada announced at EBACE that detailed design work and advanced production preparations have started for the all-new PW810 engine, just 3 months after the official launch of its 10,000-pound thrust class PW800 family. The 810 has been selected by Cessna to power its new large cabin Citation Columbus business aircraft. Dan Brightman, VP for PW800 programs, says, quote, "We are working with the objective of significantly reducing assembly and test time for the PW800 as it relates to our current standards," unquote. First run of the PW810 is being targeted for mid-2009. The Citation Columbus, designed for intercontinental travel with a target range of 4,000 nautical miles at Mach 0.8, carrying 8 passengers, is expected to enter service in 2014. Brazil's Embraer announced Tuesday at EBACE that its forthcoming mid-light and mid-size jets have officially been named the Legacy 450 and the Legacy 500 respectively, taking their places in the product lineup alongside the ERJ-based Legacy 600, which is already in operation. Luis Carlos Afonso, Embraer Executive VP for Executive Jets, says the company has signed over 100 letters of interest and will begin receiving customer orders at EBACE. Quote, "The Legacy 450 and the Legacy 500 will be revolutionary best-in-class jets, building on the Legacy brand, delivering premium comfort, outstanding performance, and low operating costs," unquote. As ANN reported, Embraer teased the new jets, calling them the MLJ and MSJ, in concept form at NBAA 2007 in Atlanta. The jets were formally unveiled in April. Eclipse Aviation announced on Monday at EBACE it has received permission from the U.S. Department of Commerce Bureau of Industry and Security to export the Eclipse 500 jet and its components to Russia. Foreign Affairs and International Trade Canada's Export and Import Controls Bureau has also granted a permit to Pratt & Whitney Canada and Eclipse Aviation to export the PW610F engine to Russia. Eclipse says the milestone is the next step in establishing an assembly facility in Ulyanovsk as part of its earlier agreement with European Technology and Investment Research Center, or ETERC. As ANN reported, in January, the two companies announced their intent to build an international production facility as part of a significant investment by ETERC in Eclipse. Up next on ANN, Sukhoi's SSJ-100 makes its first flight. Airlines are hurting, but industry employment is up. and Herb Kelleher chairs his final meeting at Southwest Airlines. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 21st, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Russian plane maker Sukhoi Civil Aircraft has completed another major step in its attempt to muscle into the competitive regional jet marketplace. The company reported on Monday it completed a successful first flight of the Sukhoi Superjet 100, a regional jet which will be offered in versions from 75 to 95 seats. Sukhoi says Alexander Yablonsev, its chief pilot, and test pilot Leonid Chikhanov flew the plane for just over an hour, reaching an altitude of 1,200 meters, or about 4,000 feet. The flight included four passes over a runway at varying altitudes, a rectangular pattern, and a successful landing. After the flight, Yablonsev praised the plane's thrust-to-weight ratio and handling. Quote, "This aircraft is a real success, and I can surely state that it is as easy to pilot as Airbus or Boeing's planes I had previously captained," unquote. Mikhail Pogosyan, Director General of Sukhoi Holding, passed some credit around. Quote, "Our team, comprised of thousands of people from all over the world, shares this big success. At the same time, there are a lot of things to do. Certification tests are ahead. I am sure that we will win and the aircraft will be a success," unquote. That worldwide team includes engine maker PowerJet, which builds the plane's turbofans, and Boeing, which has a consulting role in areas including project management, marketing, certification, and support. The SSJ-100 will compete head-on with popular regional jets from Embraer and Bombardier and is expected to reach its first customers shortly after certification later this year. List price is projected to be under $30 million U.S. Given the recent cuts and bankruptcies in the airline industry, you might be surprised to hear that overall industry employment was up 1.6% in March compared to March of last year. The U.S. Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Statistics reported those figures on Tuesday. They indicate the 14th consecutive increase in full-time equivalent employee levels for the scheduled passenger carriers year to year. The seven network carriers, except for American Airlines, all added FTEs from March 07 to March 08. All of the low-cost carriers and regional carriers American Eagle, SkyWest, ExpressJet, Horizon Air, Pinnacle, Mesaba, Executive, Transstates, Shuttle America, and GoJet Airlines also increased their FTEs compared to last year. You can find more details in the text version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. The airline industry is about to change forever. Today is Herb Kelleher's last day as chairman of Southwest Airlines. The Dallas Morning News reports that after chairing today's annual meeting, the 77-year-old Kelleher will step back into an officially undefined role, but one that'll keep him on the airline's payroll until at least 2013, at $400,000 a year. Kelleher has had a controversial, colorful, and uniquely successful career with Southwest. He started the airline, originally called Air Southwest, with businessman Roland King in 1967. The airline industry was still federally regulated then, and it was a good thing that Kelleher was an attorney because it took 4 years in court to defeat challenges from Continental, Braniff, and Trans-Texas Airlines before the new carrier was able to begin service. The court battle inspired Winifred Barnum to write a children's book called Gum Wrappers and Goggles in 1983. In that story, a small jet named TJ Love, in Southwest-like livery, was bullied by larger jets wearing the colors of Continental and Braniff. The book was eventually adapted as a stage musical entitled Show Your Spirit and was performed in cities served by Southwest Airlines. After enduring some hand-to-mouth times in its first few years, Southwest went on to do something no other U.S. airline has done, run up a string of 35 consecutive profitable years. Regarding the industry's current fuel price crisis, Kelleher recalls the 1990s, when financial difficulties and cutbacks at other airlines allowed Southwest to expand quickly in Chicago, California, and other cities. He says, quote, "I think potentially, as the industry contracts in economic agony as the result of jet fuel prices, that you may find Southwest has a substantial number of new opportunities opening up before it," unquote. Kelleher says he loves solving problems, but even though his new contract will keep him working till he's 82 years old, he does plan to slow down a little. Quote, "Basically, for the last 40 years, I have worked 7-day weeks, at least 12 hours a day. Hopefully, when we make this transition, I'll have a few weekends off," unquote. Is a junkyard or a used car lot an appropriate use of an airport's property? The FAA says no, and that the city of San Diego is in violation of the terms of the 1962 government grant that gave it Brown Field. Over a period of decades, the city has allowed non-aviation uses to overtake the airport property like weeds. The city says the lease income is what supports the airport, and at least for now, there's no coordinated plan to put the land to any other use. A compromise gave non-aviation-related business owners a year to make other plans, but complaints from tenants to city council has stalled the evictions. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports Democratic Congressman Bob Filner of San Diego has approached the FAA to protest that rushing the evictions doesn't make sense. Quote, "You have some pretty incompetent administrations giving out these non-conforming leases for years. Now all of a sudden this has to be reversed, even when there are no immediate development plans," unquote. His characterization of the administrations as incompetent may hit a raw nerve right now. Since the non-conforming tenants had their leases canceled, but the evictions were stopped, those car lots are under no obligation to keep paying rent, yet they're still occupying the land. So the city is just out the money. Also, a $2.1 million FAA grant application from the city is in jeopardy if the evictions don't resume. Aviation-related tenants complain they can't afford lease rates that are bid higher by non-aviation businesses, which don't need to be located at an airport. Reg Finch, who's president of the San Diego Flight Museum, says his lease is costing him up to 4 times what tenants pay at other municipal airports. Still ahead, NASA says Discovery will launch on schedule. The FAA names a VP to oversee NextGen. And will Boeing recover from its military batting slump? You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, May 21st, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. NASA senior managers have completed a review and announced that the Space Shuttle Discovery will be ready to launch May 31st on its original scheduled date. Commander Mark Kelly and his six STS-124 crewmates are scheduled to lift off for the International Space Station at 5:02 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Discovery's 14-day flight will carry the largest payload so far to the station and will include 3 spacewalks. It's the second of three missions bringing components to complete the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency's Kibo Laboratory. FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill announced on Tuesday the appointment of Vicki Cox as Senior Vice President of NextGen and Operations Planning. She served previously as a VP in the FAA's Air Traffic Organization. Sturgill said implementation of NextGen needs a quicker pace. Quote, "The FAA is putting an emphasis on near and midterm implementation, while the Joint Planning and Development Office continues its focus on long-term research and development and cross-agency cooperation," unquote. FAA says Cox's new job will involve the JPDO, which helps coordinate the efforts of several federal departments and agencies, including DOT and the FAA, Defense, Commerce, Homeland Security, and NASA. Boeing is the world's number two military contractor, but is definitely having a rough streak. The company lost another U.S. defense contract bid last week. Reuters reports Lockheed Martin edged Boeing to win a deal potentially worth $3.6 billion to build a new generation of global positioning satellites for the U.S. Defense Department. The KCX tanker battle with Northrop Grumman is the one that's been making headlines lately, but the negative trend can be traced all the way back to 2001, when Boeing lost the Joint Strike Fighter program to Lockheed. In March, the company lost a $766 million contract to Lockheed for development of an electronic radio system for U.S. aircraft, ships, and ground stations. In April, Boeing lost a $1 billion Navy contract for unmanned patrol aircraft to Northrop Grumman. In 2006, Boeing landed a $15 billion contract to build the U.S. Air Force's new combat search and rescue helicopter, but the Air Force has since had to restart that process after congressional auditors upheld protests from Lockheed and Sikorsky. Boeing has a similar GAO protest pending against the Air Force's tanker contract award to Northrop Grumman. Boeing's military and civilian sectors have traditionally been balanced, but projections for 2008 show the airliner side edging ahead in revenue, $38 billion to $34.5 billion. It doesn't look as though stockholders have any immediate concerns. Boeing has order backlogs years long for several popular airliners, and analysts say the military side could come back strong too. Paul Nisbet at Aerospace and Defense Specialists JSA Research tells Reuters, quote, "Northrop Grumman went through this a couple of years ago and they came right back. I think you'll see the same thing here," unquote. And finally, the fact that you're listening to this right now means you probably have a love for aviation, or at least a fascination with it. Did it ever occur to you that just putting those emotions into words could be worth money? The Virginia Department of Aviation recently announced the 2008 recipients of two scholarships. They'll get a little extra financial boost to pursue their aviation dreams. The John R. Lillard Virginia Airport Operators Council Scholarship went to Hunter Gilliams, a graduate of James River High School in Buchanan, who's enrolled in Virginia Tech's Aerospace Engineering program. Hunter tried to explain his decision to pursue an aviation career in his application essay. Quote, "Perhaps it was the freedom offered by flying, the boundless feeling of the sky, and the sense that one could go anywhere," unquote. His award is $3,000. Stephen Newcomb was awarded this year's $1,000 Willard G. Plintel Senior Scholarship. Stephen is a graduate of Lee Davis High School in Mechanicsville, has enrolled in Averett University's flight operations program, and hopes to become a commercial pilot. He wrote, quote, "Flying city to city inside the United States or across oceans to foreign countries would bring continuous satisfaction to me," unquote. If neither of these essays sounds particularly profound or eloquent, then let it serve as a reminder. Life's prize often goes to the guy who takes the trouble to write his thoughts down. Okay, and the guy who's willing to fill out a mountain of paperwork. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Believe it or not, today marks our 2000th AeroCast. ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell will join me for a look back at how we got here with Managing Editor Rob Finfrock, and where we go from here with Aero TV Senior Producer Sarah Curtis. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.